4 years ago, when he became Iraq's prime minister, Nouri al-Maliki worried that Iraqis had lost all hope to lead a normal life there. That was also the time of his first visit to Washington. Today, he returns to the White House to meet with President Obama, a visit designed to show that the U.S. is normalizing its relations with Iraq. Al-Maliki's trip comes amid increasing violence in Iraq. Yesterday, bombs killed 19 people and wounded 80 across Iraq in a flurry of attacks, just 3 weeks after the U.S. military completed its withdrawal from the cities. This visit also comes amidst the entire U.S. troop drawdown. The two leaders have plenty to talk about: Iraq security, U.S. withdrawal, continuing ethnic tension, and, of course, oil. Joining us for all of this is the BBC's Jim Muir from Iraq. He is in Kurdistan in the north of the country. And Alyssa Rubin, the former Baghdad bureau chief for The New York Times, she joins us from Paris. Good morning again, Alyssa. Let's start with you. What do you think will be very first on the agenda today?
Well, I think there are three or four things, and several of them fall under the same rubric of reconciliation. And that involves, of course, the Kurds, but it also involves Iraq's Sunni minority. And there's a lot of worry about the extent to which and the speed at which Mr. Maliki has integrated Sunnis into the government. And that is a big concern for the U.S., particularly as they withdraw and are less present on the ground in mixed neighborhoods.
Is it possible, Alyssa Rubin, for these ethnic tensions to get smoothed out? This is something that's been going on for so many years, centuries in that country. Can it really happen now?
I think there are a variety of different issues. The Kurdish problem is an ethnic one. Then there are sectarian Sunni-Shia issues. I think both have a really huge economic component. If everybody were doing well and were sort of financially affluent or at least comfortable and felt they had possibilities, I think you'd see a lot less. The difficulty is that, at least along, as I'm sure Jim will explain, along the Iraq-Kurdistan border, the borders of with the three provinces that are predominantly Kurd, that there is a lot of oil, and there's a real debate about how and who controls the drilling for that oil.
Not only who controls the drilling, but who gets the profits from it. Jim Muir from the BBC, you are indeed there. What are the prospects for an agreement about oil profits in that part of the country?
Well, at the moment, it's really just put on the back burner. Up here, the main preoccupation is elections, because on Saturday, the Kurds are going to the polls, and there is a real buzz of excitement up here, I have to say. It's not dissimilar to the Obama phenomenon back where you are in the States, but also next door in Iran, the Mir Hossein Mousavi phenomenon during the recent elections there. Young people have really latched on to this reformist leader called Nosheerwan Mustafa, who's the number two, who was the number two in Mr. Talabani's big party up here. That's the Iraqi president, who's also Kurdish, but has split off and formed a kind of reform movement called Change. And they are pushing very hard. They're riding a wave of support from young people in particular, but from a lot of people who are really fed up with the two big parties who've been dominating politics up here for the past two decades. So that's very much the focus up here. They're expected to do well. They probably won't win, but they'll get a sizable majority. But there really is a feeling of change in the air, and that is the name they've given to their party. That is what's dominating thoughts up here at the moment, and ideas about how to resolve the disputes over oil will be left to the months that follow.
How closely are Iraqis actually watching this on Iraqi television, in the newspapers? You're saying there's a lot of buzz where you are. Is that true all over the country?
Just in Kurdistan, because that's where the elections are taking place. It's the three provinces, Dohuk, Erbil, and Sulaymaniyah, which make up officially the autonomous region of Iraqi Kurdistan. And they're voting for their own parliament, which they've had for many years, actually, now, but also for the president. It's the first time that the Kurdish president has been subject to a direct mandate from the people. As I say, there is this extraordinary feeling that Nosheerwan, the reformist leader, has unleashed a kind of forces, the same kind of reformist forces or aspirations for change that we saw both in the States and in Iran next door. Now, of course, in Iran they were stifled. Here the political culture is different. The two big parties do dominate, but they are at least in theory committed to democracy, freedom, and all that sort of stuff. So they can't simply stifle this really impressive movement that is now taking place up here.
Alyssa Rubin of the New York Times. This is Farai. Just wanted to get your reaction to a little bit from the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, Chris Hill. He was speaking on C-SPAN.
This is the year where, in addition to getting our forces out of the remaining cities, as we've just done, we're also going to be reducing the overall number of forces. We have some 120,000, 130,000 forces in Iraq today. And the plan is, and we're going to follow this plan, is that by August of next year, that is just 13 months from now, we'll be down to between 35,000 and 50,000 forces, and they will be entirely in a training role.
Now, he just said this yesterday. Given the violence, is that realistic?
Well, I think it all depends. The violence accelerates or not. Iraq has shown it can tolerate pretty high levels of violence before the wheels really come off. And these episodes, one big suicide bombing, these were lots of little episodes, and that's something people have gotten pretty used to over the last 5-6 years. And so I think if you see sort of low-level violence, primarily in Baghdad and large parts of the country, relatively quiet, then yes, it is possible. I mean, after all, Iraqis now have to ask us to come into the cities to help. Until they do that, and I think they will be very reluctant to do that because they don't want to suggest that they're dependent on the United States. Mr. Maliki doesn't want to suggest that, and neither do other politicians. We really don't have anything to do other than to leave, except for those people who are staying as trainers.
Let me go back to Jim Muir with the BBC. A Wall Street Journal yesterday published an interview with Mr. al-Maliki in which he actually, not surprisingly, disagreed with critics who say he's got too much power. How is he viewed in that country? Is he viewed as someone with too much power, or can he pull this off, and will he get reelected?
I think it depends who, because Iraqis are quite divided in their perceptions of things. It depends which Iraqis you're talking about. Among many Arab Iraqis, there is certainly a feeling that he is doing the right thing, because there is a great thirst for authority, for the state, for things above militias and narrow sectarian interests. And he played that card very cleverly in provincial elections back in January, when instead of his own party is called the Dawah Party, it's an Islamist Shiite party, but then they changed their name for the elections. They called themselves the State of Law. And those are the two concepts that Iraqis yearn for, the state and law, the rule of law and order. So for a lot of Arab Iraqis, the emergence of something like a strong man in Baghdad with consensus of the people is something fairly welcome. But up here in Kurdistan, it's a different business. They do see a kind of autocratic side. They fear the development of a kind of centralist mentality in Baghdad, which, of course, they paid a very high price for in the past, the Kurds. They were heavily persecuted by Saddam Hussein and lost many tens of thousands of people killed by his regime. So there is anxiety up here. I talked to Masoud Barzani, for example, the president of Iraqi Kurdistan. He quite diplomatically suggested that he was worried about signs of autocracy and over-centralism taking root in Baghdad once again.
Just quickly, Jim Muir, is the United States doing enough? Will they have to do more, or can this all work out?
Well, again, talking to people like Mr. Barzani, there is a lot to be done. There's this fault line, an ethnic fault line that runs from the Syrian border over in the west down to the Iranian border to the east. And basically, they are very worried that when the Americans are no longer there to police, as it were, or to referee that line, which has had a lot of tension along it, especially in Kirkuk and Mosul and other areas that lie along that line, disputed territories, oil rich as well. It's a very explosive and combustible situation. They do want the Americans to work very hard before they pull out to make sure that differences are resolved. And there's a lot of thorny issues over Kirkuk and so on, which the Kurds claim they want it as part of Kurdistan. A lot of thorny issues there, and a lot of work needs to be done to make sure that it doesn't all burst into flames when the Americans do pull out.
All right. Jim Muir, BBC reporter in Iraq from Kurdistan, thanks so much for joining us. And Alyssa Rubin, former Baghdad bureau chief for The New York Times, thanks to you as well.